Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the U.S.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, the Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to the Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
Ben, I am a newly minted dog owner.
Are we going to talk about this?
Yeah, I want to talk about it because I have questions. You've been a dog owner for how many years?
Well, I had one when I was a kid, but
as an adult, like adult caretaker of a dog.
As an adult, we are coming up on 3 years.
I'm interested in hearing how this has changed your relationship with your wife, because before dog or BD, I used to have conversations with my wife about culture and movies and food and beverage. Now, Ben, most conversations with her involve my dog's poop, its consistency, frequency, and color.
Sure.
Is this a thing that happens to you when you become a dog owner? You just start talking about poop all the time?
I think you've noticed my sense of humor, Adam.
But I mean, in the way that, like, we don't make fun of it. We're like grading it.
No,
we're
like,
how was he out there? Did he make a great big poop? What'd that poop look like? How many times did he poop today?
I would say
we're obsessed with it.
Yeah, because you don't want the poop in the house. That's why. Like, knowing where the dog is at, W/R/T poop, is how you keep poop out of your house. And it is, it can be incredibly frustrating where you're like, I know you didn't poop when I walked you at noon. I've taken you on a walk before dinner. Now it's after dinner. It's time for bed. I am, like, walking you around this neighborhood desperate for you to drop some kids off at the pool so that we can go home and go to bed and I don't have to toss and turn worrying that you're going to get up in the middle of the night and poop.
That poop anxiety is so real. It's so real, Ben.
He hasn't pooped in the house in more than 2 years, I want to say. Definitely more than a year and a half. And still, it's good, right? Like, you need to, like, have your dog also not have poop anxiety.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, and part of it is, like, we weren't sure if he was okay in the beginning. We are now, at this point, the owners of a 5-year-old Wheaton Terrier.
You know, I think you should all be nicer to Will Wheaton.
And Sprocket is awesome in every way. But, you know, those first couple days, he was soft serving it up in the back. we were afraid something was wrong with him. Like, maybe he's stressed out, or maybe he's sick, or maybe he's got parvo or something.
Hmm.
But so far, that is not the case. He just may be an emotional dog.
Yeah, you
get his dog life in a new home.
You got to adapt to a new situation, and your poo may go out of whack for a week or two. How is the cat doing with the new addition to the fam?
This has been a problem because you've been to my home before. We have an upstairs area and sort of a finished basement where I broadcast from. The cat basically lives downstairs and we have a baby gate at the top of the stairs to keep the dog away from the cat. because we have kind of a, not an old cat, but the cat's like 10 years old. And the cat's been the beneficiary of being like the only child pet in
sure.
the house
yeah.
for its entire life. And now we've introduced this dog, and in a way I'm totally sympathetic to. Like,
uh-huh.
I think it's fucked up to put the cat through this, but it is clearly going to be a very long road to get them acclimated to each other. And from what I've read, like, that's pretty common. Like, don't plan on the cat coming around to this idea in a week or two. Plan on it being like maybe a year. So it's at this point there's like a demilitarized zone of a stairwell,
yeah,
and cat downstairs, dog upstairs living arrangement. And at this point I don't know what else to do about it.
I don't want to make you feel terrible, Adam, but we got a dog after my cat had been a member of the family for 4 or 5 years when I was a kid, and she never forgave us. She just walked around the house yowling, angry all the time for the rest of her life.
Until you came home one day and your cat blew its brains out.
Yeah, yeah. Just that paw on the side of the gun handle up to the head.
You like made me do this.
Robert Smigel doing the voice.
Yeah, yeah.
This is your fault.
I didn't know you had a Robert Smigel Toontz's cat at home. Makes the situation all the more tragic.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, it's going to be a long road, Ben. And the worst part, God, like, this is the worst part, is like, I love this dog already.
Yeah.
And that's a bad thing because its previous owner, his previous owner, may in fact take him back.
Oh, no.
Because they're having such sad feelings about giving him up.
Yeah.
They gave him up because they've got a young family, and they've got another young one on the way, and this dog, not great around little kids.
Hmm.
And so rather than subject the kids to the threat of a Wheaton Terrier, they thought, why not stick him in a home that has no hope of ever having children? Like ours. So... it may be by the time this episode comes out, we may have had to give him back, which would be awful. I hope that doesn't end up happening.
Yeah, that would be a sad, sad Fifi.
So we've got a developing situation here, Ben, and updates as they come.
Mm. Well, thank you for sharing that with us, Adam. Do you want to get into a terrible episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine?
Yeah, there's no sense in prolonging it any longer. I wish... the writers of this episode could take this one back. It's season 1, episode 9, Move, A Long Home.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
This has actually a pretty fun opening. Sisko's getting ready for a dressy occasion. He's got his dress uniform on. Jake comes in.
Dress uniform.
He's like lounging around, sipping on some lemonade. And let's slip that he has taken to hanging out on the promenade, scoping babes with Nog. And Sisko's like, man, I have let this go on long enough. You and I have got to have a conversation about girls. And Jake lets slip that he already had the birds and the bees conversation, and it was with Nog. That, Adam, is the premise of an episode. That is a fucking great premise. Like,
sex ed from Nog would be so amazing.
Like, sex ed from Nog would be amazing. Like, the idea of, like, oh, God, this commander has made this kind of surprise career move where he's gone to this, like, terrible post that wound up being a really exciting post, and he's really committed to it. But a consequence of that is his young son is learning social and sexual mores from an alien who has a totally different set of values from him. Like, what a fascinating premise to kick off an episode.
I love the idea that Nog pronounces body parts the way he pronounces human. Like, this is the pubis mons. Yeah, I love the idea of this, and it's such a tease that we really don't get any more after the fact. Jake lets slip a couple of things. He's 14 years old, And he's interested in Bajoran girls. And Jake, I see you. I see you, man. I too am into Bajoran women.
You and Jake have a lot in common. Both into Bajoran women, both very immature.
How dare you? Sisko bitches about not having worn the dress uniform in a couple of years. Ben, my question to you is, has it been since his wife's funeral that he's worn it?
Wow.
Because that is a heaviness that they don't speculate on.
Yeah.
But what if they had?
Yeah. That would have been real, real sadsies.
Yeah. Instead, we get like, boy, I used to be a real fatso 3 years ago. This thing's really dumpy now, all of a sudden.
Baggy's quite fashionable on Bajor right now. Lemonade.
Speaking of dress uniforms, Julian Bashir is apparently unaware of replicators.
I'm positive I packed my dress uniform.
I guess Bashir doesn't trust replicators with respect to his uniform. In the same way most people don't trust it with their coffee. He's afraid he's going to get a real bitter dress uniform out of there.
O'Brien's been away. The replicators are just not working great.
O'Brien's still gone. Oh, man. Cut to O'Brien on Earth, like, sleeping on an inflatable mattress in his mother-in-law's guest room. Like, just getting shithouse drunk off of the pint of scotch that he bought.
Yeah.
How did I get here?
Do you think that this is, they wrote this into the script after the costume department got their wires crossed and couldn't get a dress uniform together in time? Or do you think this was like original script material? Because if it's original script material, then whoever wrote the script doesn't understand the world that they're writing for.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure either scenario is particularly interesting, unfortunately, you know?
Well, it's interesting from the standpoint of, did they write this scene in to explain why they screwed up? Or did they make the mistake of not remembering that replicators exist when they were writing the script?
I don't know. I'm sort of inclined to believe that this is just another in the case file of Julian Bashir, dopey doctor. He says he has one, and he just can't find it.
You look fine, Julian. Relax.
They're all standing here waiting for this alien delegation. This is the first diplomatic visit from wormhole aliens, Gamma Quadrant aliens. And the folks that come through are sort of like if elves from Lord of the Rings got really into face tats.
Forehead tats, yeah.
It's like, we don't want to do loaf for like 12 people, so we'll just do some like markers on their foreheads. And
these guys are called the Wadi.
Yeah, and the Wadi are not interested in engaging in a complicated first contact scenario. They're like, we heard about quarks. We want to go fuck around with some of the games. We're into games.
They're sort of like that version of grandparent that only travels if it means going from casino to casino. I don't know if you know this type of person.
Are you two heading for Las Vegas?
Yeah, we're going to score.
But yeah, like, this is a type. Like, let's go down to New Orleans and do some riverboat gambling.
Yeah. This is not really something that goes down in my family, but I have friends who have families like this.
We come to meet Fallow, who is the leader of the Wadi. He's the leader because he has the tallest hair, the longest ponytail, the most Ben Stiller-like carriage.
The only lines.
Yeah, that's true. All of the Wadi look like they wear the carpet from a mall Santa display. Like, they all look vaguely nutcrackery.
They look vaguely like Jewish nutcrackery, though, because it's all blue and silver, you know?
Yeah. Fallow talks like a magician, too. Like, in a wide-eyed, dramatic, almost holding hands in front of his face kind of way. Like,
right. Yeah, he is not here to act in an episode of Deep Space Nine. He's in an episode of Fool Us with Penn and Teller.
You remember John C. Reilly at the end of Boogie Nights, you know, when they show his future as, like, the hacky magician who cuts the lady in half?
Yeah.
And, like, all he does is, like, do the jazz hands in front of his face? That's Sfallow.
Yeah. That's the level of character development we've got, is, like, a one-beat joke from a Paul Thomas Anderson film.
Yeah.
They all pile into Quark's bar, and we come back from title sequence, and Quark is like very concerned about this situation, because he's worried these people came from another side of the galaxy. Like, who knows what they have to spend? And Sisko's like, listen, dude, like, if you want to have a bar here on the station, like, part of your job is like cultural attaché. You gotta show these people a good time. You got to show them that we can hang with them and we can have peaceful coexistence, and what they want is to play games, and you're the dude with the games. So make it happen.
It sure elevates Quark up into a hospitality situation that, you know, it seems like he would be equipped for. Like, who better for first contact than a person for whom hospitality is their mission?
Mm.
He certainly seems more apt and capable than Sisko, who is, like, head in hands, just tired of this shit.
Yeah, and there's a pretty fun scene where Quark and the Wadi kind of, like, negotiate a means of exchange, because the Wadi are obsessed with a type of stick.
That look strangely like bully sticks?
They look like something a dog would be quite enthusiastic about chewing up. They call them clon pigs, I think. And Quark is like, not so fast. That's not really gonna move the needle around here. And they try and ply him with fancy booze, but he doesn't take to it. And so they get stuck with giving him gems and rare rocks.
Fallow's like, you've never been to the gift shop of a natural history museum, have you? I'm about to blow your mind, friend. Look at this velvet sack of polished stones.
$15 for as much as the stack will fit.
Oh, man. Like, just so classically worthless.
Yeah, and Quark is like, you know, being a Ferengi, obsessed with business but not good at it, he thinks that these guys are whales, so he's like, send these men some drinks.
Yeah, and it isn't long before they are sort of taking his pants and shirt and business in terms of their winnings. Like, they are betting and winning and then doubling their bet and winning again. And Quark is really sweating them. Like, this is not going well for Quark.
I just invited a dozen Rain Mans into my casino.
I was actually going to try and make some real money tonight, but in honor of Mike's alley-like return to the ring, I'll sit with you all for a while.
Yeah, like, in the beginning, Quark is like, oh, I got these fucking whales here. This is going to be great. I'm gonna enrich myself off of their ignorance, and the polished stone is on the other foot fairly quickly when the Wadi is really taking the house down. Quark is like, we gotta change the tide. I'm gonna change the Dabo girl out for a random Ferengi, and this random Ferengi starts hitting buttons underneath the table. Buttons. He's hitting buttons in a way that is so obvious. that there's no possible way that Fallow could not detect that he's starting to be cheated here.
Yeah. I just think I recently got a watch of the smart variety, and I was thinking about, like, the implications of it for cheating at gambling. Like, if you can have something on your wrist that vibrates whenever you need it to, like, you could very easily rig up a way to, you know, use it as a card counting aid.
Hey.
And the idea of just like a like a bright red button under the countertop. being how Quirk's Dabo table is rigged is just like, give me a fucking break. And also, where's the Vegas Gambling Commission, you know?
That's a great point. It's the most lowest rent form of cheating ever. Like, there is far more sophisticated gambling cheating going on now. There's more sophisticated gambling cheating going on 50 years ago than there is on this station.
It's a very strange choice in the script, and the first of many.
Yeah. Fallow is rightly insulted by the idea that this new relationship has borne out this cheating.
Did I say first? I meant first after the first dozen.
Sure. Fallow's like, I got a game for you.
I know we said we wouldn't be drinking during this episode, Adam, but I'm drinking.
That's fair. Do what you have to do to get through it, man. I'm on a bunch of barbiturates.
Oh, yeah. To be quite honest about it, I was in a pail. A fucking pail. Mr. Bucket, I have to revert
back to my living state. I don't use the bucket anymore. So Fallow's like, I'm going to blow your mind with a game from where we come from. And he produces a box that upon opening it, like, Q powers a giant board game into the room.
Yeah, a giant, like, if you took one of these into a games workshop, you'd be the lord of the lair.
It is giant.
It's really big. Turns out these are tabletop gaming elves.
The game is called Chula, and it's a game that Quark is not made to know the rules of before playing.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
And as soon as the game manifests on the tabletop, we cut to a pajamaed Sisko who is sort of rolling over in bed, who, upon completing his rollover, finds himself on the ground and wearing a uniform and not his pajamas anymore.
What is the mechanic at play here? They beam him into a... like, is he in a holodeck? Is he in the game? Has he been miniaturized and put in the game somehow? Has he been virtualized? Why does he have his uniform? Why does he have a tricorder? What the fuck is going on?
We barely get any time to consider this before we hear Bashir just screaming. Our players rally around Bashir. It turns out Sisko and Bashir aren't the only ones here. They've Dax and Kira are also on the scene. Bashir has been screaming in a way to get himself out of what he perceives to be a nightmare.
Yeah.
But it's the kind of screaming the actor really doesn't believe in, you know? He's doing the room style acting where he's like, ah!
Ah!
It's not over. Everybody betrayed me. I fed up with this world.
This is how I wake up from a nightmare. Like, he doesn't even bother to give it a full-throated scream.
It's really weird. Also, like, we should talk about the place that they have woken up in. It's just kind of a series of hallways and rooms that have the linoleum flooring that you would see in, like, a church dining hall type of environment, and then just like unremarkable flat orange walls and purple diamond shaped doors. Like, the set design is like astonishingly lazy and uninspired.
Well, it really felt to me like it was set design for budget. They're like, look, I know this is an impossible situation, but you have $40 and you've got to make us, you got to make us one room and a hallway that we can just shoot at different angles and then set decorate in different ways. And that's all we got, man.
Please,
can you do it?
Can we take some money away from TNG across the street? I mean, that show's almost over, man.
They spent $30,000 on the Wadi's carpet sample. drape capes and ponytails, and they left just a pittance for this set. And given how much of the show takes place on this set, it's a real shame.
I think all of the budget went into the wigs on the Wadi.
Yeah, that wig game is tight.
They all have a ton of hair, and the hair looks good, but then they have no loaf. They have, like, bad, smeary makeup on their foreheads that is just, like, a series of shapes that's smearing, you know? Like, give me a fucking break. Like, who fucking did that? And then the only...
Get some henna up in this bitch.
The only other set we see is, like, one hallway from their ship. This is like the cheapest episode of Star Trek.
Yeah, it really is.
What are they saving their money for?
I don't know. I mean, I would have thought that the budget lessons of early TNG would have been learned to a degree where there would be more runway episode to episode in Deep Space Nine. But they clearly ran out of runway here.
Yeah. Odo is sitting in his office.
I'm Mr. Bunkin.
And... young 14-year-old Jake comes in. He was like, hey, dude, have you seen my dad? I woke up this morning expecting to have him tell me about wearing a rubber and asking for consent, and he wasn't around. And Odo's like, all right, kid, go run along. I'm sure he's up in ops. And he's like, no, he's not in ops. And I asked the computer, and he's not on the station. And Odo's like, well... that's very interesting. I didn't realize my pants were around my ankles, but I'll look into it.
I mean, this speaks to a thing. This is like a computer MacGuffin that they wield often, which is anytime a senior staff person is suddenly not on the station or the ship, some sort of alarm should go off, right? Like any workplace, you should clock in and clock out. And if for some reason you're not where you're supposed to be and you haven't clocked in or clocked out, the computer should automatically send a message to security that, like, hey, something's up here. But because of the need to forward a story, we don't get that technology.
It's also weird that Odo is like maybe the only interesting thing in this episode after the idea of Jake learning about sex from Nog is that Odo has is trying to save face in front of the commander's son. Like, he doesn't want to admit that he has been completely blindsided by the information that Jake comes down there with.
When I find out where your father went, I'll let you know.
What this means is that for hours, the four top officers on the station have been unaccounted for, and this is the first Odo is hearing about it. He's like the equivalent of like tucking into his seat at the start of the workday, you know, got his cup of coffee, got his paper folded in a quarter,
you know, has his bucket put away.
Yeah.
And in his special bucket pelican case.
He does not see this fire drill coming at all.
What do you think, if you were to list out Odo's job, what do you think, in terms of importance, what's at the top of that list? The safety and security of the senior staff, right?
Yeah.
That's got to be at the top.
He's very embarrassed, and like embarrassed in an interesting and very human way, because he goes up to ops, and Lieutenant Toast is in there.
Lieutenant George Primman, Starfleet Security.
Just as blissfully ignorant of what's going on, and Odo like lights into him like it is not Odo's fault, but it's Lieutenant Toast's fault that they missed this.
I heard that Wadi party went on all night.
How long have you been a security officer, Lieutenant?
This is classic bad management right here. Like Odo's pants are down, so he's going to pull down the pants of a subordinate, mm-hmm. like so that they're both pantsless.
It's not a good look for Odo, but it also really humanizes him in an endearing way, you know? Like, oh yeah, like people make that mistake for sure.
Right. So back in Quark's bar...
And just for those keeping track at home, that's the last interesting thing that happens in this episode.
You may hit the forward 30 button about 20 times at this point. So back in Quark's bar, Quark is white-knuckling his way through a game he doesn't understand. And Ask anyone who's been in a casino for any length of time, like, the number one thing you don't want to do in gambling is play a game you don't know the rules for.
No.
And Cork doesn't even understand the stakes. At this point, Cork doesn't know that his game pieces are Sisko, Bashir, Kira, and Dax. He's just like, he thinks he's playing himself out of hock.
Is there a minimum wager?
And that's the stress that he's under right now. It's about to get way more heightened once that realization hits him.
Within the game, the gang has opened a door and discovered a little girl who's playing like triangle hopscotch and singing the rhyme that is kind of the synecdoche of why this episode is so bad.
Alma Rain, count to four, Alma Rain, then three more. Alma Rain, if you can see, Alma Rain, you'll come with me.
It's hurtful to see serious actors do this to themselves. Like to see a Nana visitor with her amount of gravitas,
yeah,
have to sing this song and do the hand motions.
It's really interesting to like see the way they all, like, we have four serious actors who all choose to play this really differently.
Yeah.
Terry Farrell is the one that puts it together, that what they have to do is say the rhyme and do the hopscotch exactly the way the girl does. And she does that in the kind of like she plays it like I'm in a thriller and I've like solved the puzzle that the villain laid here for us way. And then she does the rhyme and does the hopscotch in a like in like the steely eyed, like, get through this and we'll get to the next challenge. But then Avery Brooks does it and he's like sing-songy and silly and like big.
Yeah.
In the Avery Brooks way. And Alexander Siddig is like sheepish and embarrassed, and Nana Visitor like almost looks at the camera.
Come on, just say the rhyme.
Alma Rain, come with me. Alma Rain,
Alma Rain, count to four. Alma Rain, then three more.
Alma Rain, then three more. Alma Rain, if you can see. Alma Rain, you'll come with me.
Alma Rain, you'll come with me.
You're exactly right on Terry Farrell. Like, I feel like her attitude throughout the rest of this episode is crucial to this thing being taken as seriously as it can be, which is to say, like, this is hanging by a thread. Like, this whole house of cards could come down if she's not acting the way that she's acting. If she embodies the persona that an Avery Brooks does, yeah, or an Anna Visitor does, this thing falls apart entirely.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of examples of this, of movies that are saved by a single performance, where, like, you know, Harrison Ford is in a terrible movie about like a digital bank heist, but it's just like he's so fucking compelling to watch that it's like, I don't care what's going on. Like, give me more scenes where he's like worried about his family. Like, all I want to see is scenes of Harrison Ford being worried about his family.
Right. And it's so weird that the choice is made to not give this four any clear stakes, because if this were made to be life-threatening immediately, like, then I think the attitudes of everyone involved changes.
Yeah, like,
and we might take this episode more seriously, but instead, because they don't take it seriously, it makes it really hard for us to.
Kira gets hurt and then Bashir gets hurt, but it's like it's a kind of pain that seems, it's like less than a bee sting, you know? It's like, ow. Okay, well, that's over. That didn't work. What should we do? And like, Terry Farrell is really committed to, like, I know this script sucks, but let's like give it something, like give it some performance to like get it going.
You know, a really great example of this theme was in that, what was it, the late 90s, early 2000s, that Sean Penn, Michael Douglas movie, The Game.
Yeah.
Like, how much were you wishing that this game was like that game?
Are you going to spend the rest of the evening prying at that clown's mouth?
A billion percent.
God, me too. Like, you talk about stakes raising, and you know what I was hoping for was like a moment where sanity started to slip a little bit.
Right.
Everyone seems to maintain a level of competence, and the challenge of the game is so low throughout that there's just never any stakes at all.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, even like they show up at like a cocktail party, and the gimmick of the cocktail party is that there is smoke that's choking them, and they have to drink the drinks at the cocktail party to like survive the smoke. And it's just like, what is this about? Like, what's the premise of this? Like, at least
the worst part about that scene is that even in like a Skyrim, for example, or like in a role-playing game, mm-hmm. you're given choices to choose from to either save your life or die. But in that smoke room scene, there's only one choice. It's choose to drink the drink or not. And that is so bullshit. Like, there's no stakes to that either, because what else are they going to do? If you don't drink the drink, you know you die. So we might as well try drinking the drink. And then that ends up being the solution. This is like Candyland.
Yeah, it's really simplistic.
Do you think the makeup of the four, if you change the makeup of the four, do you think it improves the story? Like, what if Jake is one of the four, or Nog even, to like tie it into the cold open, or like saddle them with someone who's weak?
Right. That's
it just seemed like something was missing on this part of the story.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, oh, it's got to be the four main characters while Odo runs around freaked out and Quark white knuckles it through the game. But yeah, it's an episode with a fundamental flaw, which is it doesn't really understand the universe it's written for.
Every man in this smoke party scene looks like Jared Leto. So that gave it some terror for me.
Yeah, that would be a frightening situation.
He just kept talking in one long, incredibly unbroken sentence, moving from topic to topic so that no one had the chance to interrupt. It was really quite hypnotic.
So it's around this time that Odo and Lieutenant Toast have come up with the solution to the problem, which is that some like energy burst was detected on the Wadi ship. And so Odo kind of big dogs Lieutenant Toast into beaming him over to the Wadi ship. He's like, it's a pretty fun bit of business where he says, oh, is it against Starfleet regulations to beam somebody over to an alien ship without permission?
Well, I'm not in Starfleet.
Sort of an amazing moment that, you know, Odo is like, look at me, I'm the captain now. On Deep Space Nine, he's the senior in command at this point.
Did Odo's makeup look like it had improved quite a bit to you?
Inconclusive, given the definitional constraints of the program.
It seemed smoother and more like a better version of what it's trying to be than previous episodes to me.
Yeah.
But whatever. So he beams over to this ship and he like opens a couple of doors and there's just like blinding bright light on the other side of him. And he goes through the doors and then he's just in Quark's bar. So apparently Quark's bar is on the Wadi ship. Or the Wadi ship have a pair of doors that beam you to Quark's bar. Or they had an idea that didn't make any sense and they just kept it in the script.
Here's one for you, Ben. This is the moment where Odo realizes that the Wadi are involved in the abduction of the crew people. Why doesn't Odo hold a phaser up to Fallow's head and be like, return our crew people, asshole?
Yeah,
like,
this is not a fun joke anymore. No.
Yeah, he is never threatened for this. Like, what is it? Under the guise of first contact protocol, you're not supposed to threaten a species that has kidnapped your people?
Well, listen, they've only kidnapped four. If it was five, it would be a different conversation. That's the real, that's the point where it kind of tips over into like unacceptable.
I love how Quark is like, I don't want to play this game anymore. Odo, you should play for me. And Odo's like, fuck that.
You shit the bed, you sleep in it, Quark.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so like the game gets more and more tense as we go from here, because you know, like Bashir gets like beamed out by a bunch of bright lights, and then they're, you know, like he's supposed to kill somebody else, and Quark like doesn't want to take responsibility for it, gets down on his knees and begs them not to make him take responsibility for it, and they nonetheless say like, oh, okay, well, we'll just program the computer to decide which one's going to die. And they keep going, like like Bashir is missing, but they keep hearing his voice, and they go into through a door that leads into some caves, which is like the caves that we recognize from every late TNG episode ever.
Right.
And Dax like hurts her leg, but it's not broken, but it's also like not clear that she can move that good. It's like, how hurt is it then? I don't know.
This part is so fucked up, and this is a part where the script functionally breaks for me.
Yeah.
Because Bashir is next to this doorway that he believes to be the way out. We don't see him go through it, but Bashir all but disappears for the rest of the episode.
Yeah.
Leaving Kira, Dax, and Sisko to wander around the rock face. Like, where the fuck is he?
Like, was he there, or was it like an illusion? Like, establish that it's an illusion if it's an illusion. Or, you know, or whatever. Like, it just, yeah, it's like, it's there for no reason.
Right. Right, and if that is Bashir, and he chose to leave them instead of helping, like, that's some more dark shit for Bashir.
Right.
Not a good look.
I guess the climactic moment is that the commander and Major Kira and Dax are going to try and, like, sidle across a very narrow ridge on the rock face.
Only a few meters more.
And they're like sidling gingerly across, and then there's like an earthquake, and Kira goes over the side, and they're trying to rescue her, and it's like tense as fuck, and then they all go over the edge, and then all four of them like are just kind of like cue flashed into Quark's bar.
They made it! I won!
You know, none the worse for wear, all in their uniforms, no dirt on them.
They all realize that they've been in a game and their lives weren't actually threatened. And there is what should be an ECU on Kira's face, but I was just like locked onto her anyway. The look on her face is how we feel watching this episode. Like she is disgusted.
The entire series was in the mind of a little boy, sick little boy in bed.
Bashir's like, boy, that was a close one, guys. You remember when I tried to save you from that cliff face? You remember that, right? How I tried really hard to save your life and didn't run away like a coward? Good thing that was all fake.
And so these dumb aliens, the Wadi, are like, hey, guys, no hard feelings, right? Just a game. Just a fun diversion. Good hangs. Well, we're off.
We're off to move along home.
We're off to go have our jersey raised up onto the third tier balcony of one-off alien races that are a terrible idea.
Yeah, like the Wadi costume is definitely like put in the rafters as a Hall of Fame one-off bullshit alien, right?
For sure.
Yeah, definitely have a ceremony to honor these guys.
Yeah, you know, you got your fish up there, you got your dog, you got your Wadi.
Yeah, yeah, all the greats.
All the greats. All the great aliens.
I can't believe I have to ask this, Ben, but did you like this episode?
I loved it. It's actually kind of amazing to see a TV show fail as spectacularly as this. Like, it's not fun to watch this episode, but it is interesting to watch it. Like, so many times, like, starting from the first moment where Jake is like, hey, I know about girls. Nog told me. Like, that is, like, they have so many times where an interesting idea or an interesting path presents itself that the episode could walk down, and they go hard in the other direction. Like, nope, we're not going to be doing anything interesting. No, none of the, like, insightful shit that we have come up with here is going to be paid off in any way. It's like, it's just like Flanagan's precept at work. It's great.
There's a moment, there's sort of a meta moment in this episode where Fallow tells Quark, you know, look, there are sort of two routes in this game. There's the safe route, which is longer, and the more dangerous route, which is shorter. What would you like to do? Quark repeatedly chooses the safe route, and I feel like that's what the writers did too. Like, it's a show talking about itself.
Yeah.
The stakes are so low. Low and slow, really. Like, that safe route is slow.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't matter.
The episode is just you pull it right off the bone at the end because it's so low and slow.
Yeah.
See that smoke ring on the episode? It's juicy and
delicious.
That's
what you want right there. It's a Steven Reichlin episode is what it is. Yeah.
Talk about going whole hog.
I hated this episode. I hated it not because it took a big swing and failed. I hated it because it was clearly broken. Like, this was a busted episode that they still made.
It didn't even take a big swing.
Like, it has structural problems that don't make sense.
Like, it set the wiffle ball up on the tee ball and, like, attempted to bunt and missed.
Yeah. Yeah, did not like. One thing I like a lot are the readings of our Priority One messages, Ben. You want to check those out?
I love that, too.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first Priority One message is of a commercial nature. Message goes like this. The first ep of Greatest Gen I listened to covered yesterday's Enterprise. And when Ben mentioned escape velocity near the end, I thought, have I found my people? If so, I'd like to invite you all to Space Game Junkie, a blog, YouTube channel, podcast where we gush about space video games, old and new.
Whoa.
We have new content Monday through Friday.
Dang.
A weekly podcast with developer interviews and regular events. Come join us at spacegamejunkie.com, and we can't wait to see you. Thanks, Ben and Adam. Space Game Junkie is a love letter to video games with spaceships, both old and new. Come join us to find space games you'll love to play.
Dang.
I love a space game, Ben.
I love a space game, too.
Look at Space Game Junkie doing content 5 days a week. How do they do it?
Very impressive. I'm on their website. They have a calendar as one of the sections on their website to show you how many different things they're doing every week. It's amazing.
Oh, that's fun.
They got land parties. Seems
I like it.
This seems like a heaping helping of fun. Adam, we have another Priority One message. It's from Denny, and it's for Ben and Adam. We know them. It goes like this. I recently had a difficult trip to attend a funeral for a family member. After an emotionally draining couple of days, I listened to some back episodes of Greatest Gen on my red-eye flight back home, and it really lifted my spirits. Thanks for making such a fun pod. I always look forward to hearing a new episode. Keep up the good work, guys. Ah, well, Denny, that is very sweet of you to say, and we are, you know, like, It's hard to know how to reply to these, because I think that for you and I, like, mostly Greatest Gen is just a fun thing we get to do with each other once a week. And, like, whenever we hear about it being, like, a meaningful and important thing in somebody's life, it is really touching and almost, you know, it's almost an emotion I don't know how to contain, because it just, it's fun for us, you know? But it's an honor to, like, have made something that has that much value for anyone. So thank you for writing in, Denny, and thank you for doing a P1 about it.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Denny. I mean, messages like this, I mean, there are shows for me that feel the way this show feels to Denny, and it makes me want to write those shows to tell them too, because of how great it makes me feel to hear this every time we do. So I should be better about that, because it really means a lot.
It does. Well, if you'd like to send a personal or commercial message, you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, and it will explain what to do.
Yarmouk, Angelad, Tanagra.
This episode is brought to you by the spring cleaning champions, Manscaped. This season, make sure to groom your carpets and your drapes, the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Clear out your winter bush with Manscaped's Lawnmower 5.0 and watch your confidence bloom like the springtime flowers. Hey, maybe you're getting away on weekends, getting into a swimsuit, into a sexy situation, or you're not wearing pants at all. You want to look your best from head to toe. Get yourself some Manscaped products. You know, it doesn't just have to be your junk. You know, they've got the Beard Hedger Pro Kit and a Handyman Electric Face Shaver. They make great stuff, and I think you'll really enjoy it. And you'll get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants. Put your best foot forward and present your new business project or political thing as well as you possibly can on the internet. How do you do that? Not through some cookie cutter form on a social media website or trying and failing to code a pretty website yourself. No, you go to Squarespace, start using their completely new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint, which helps you choose from professionally curated layouts and styling options that help you build a unique online presence from the ground up that is tailored to your brand or business. Squarespace has been a super loyal sponsor of The Greatest Generation. We hope you will give them a try. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/scarves to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
It's Webby season. Hi, I'm Sequoia Holmes, host of the Black People Love Paramore podcast, and we are nominated for a Webby for the episode where I interviewed Hayley Williams. In case you're unfamiliar, Black People Love Paramore is a podcast delving into the common and uncommon interests of Black people in order to help us feel more seen. We would love your vote to help us win this Webby. Please take a second, go over to the Black People Love Paramore podcast social media accounts, and you can find them at BPLP Pod across all social media platforms. Hit the link in bio and vote for Black People Love Paramore.
Hi, I'm Travis McElroy.
And I'm Teresa McElroy.
And we're the host of Schmanners.
We don't believe that etiquette should be used to judge other people.
No, on Schmanners, we see etiquette as a way to navigate social situations with confidence.
So if that sounds like something you're into,
join us every Friday on Maximum Fun, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
Sure did. At 1707, Siroc Lofton as Jake Sisko has gone into Odo's office and is like,
Nog and I were going over to Airlock 3 and watch the Bajoran transport passengers come on board.
And Odo's like,
you mean to look at the girls?
The look on his face of embarrassment at being caught ogling Bajoran girls is worth an Emmy to me. Like, this is such great acting from, like, a child actor shouldn't be able to do what he does here.
Yeah. And wow.
I started blushing during this take because, like, the look on his face is so genuinely embarrassed. Like, it is, it's like a masterclass. Like, it is so much more than this episode deserves. That moment was everything to me. That look of embarrassment on him. And he's my drunk Shimoda for it.
That is a great call, Adam. That is a really remarkable, like, that little take really contains multitudes, because he's both, like, laughing and also ashamed, and also, like, you can see that, like, this is, like, the thing that I like the most.
A lesser actor would, like, cock their head to the side and just sort of, like, kick dirt or whatever. And he does, like, four things in this take that are, like, exemplary, like, and worth studying. Like, I don't know where he gets it. I think you hire Sirach Lofton for his ability to do something like this. I thought it was just awesome. And he, like, 2 seconds later, he, like, buttons it back up into, like, rigid, I'm in trouble face. Like,
I wish we saw more of Sirach Lofton in more things. Like, I think he's really terrific.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so, too.
Like, you don't get worse at acting when you're this good at this age.
I agree. What about you, Ben? Who's your drunk Shimoda?
My drunk Shimoda is also a take that contains multitudes, and it is Major Kira when she has to do the Ella Moraine count to four.
That is rough.
As the camera moves past her on that hopscotch field, it is just... Like, Nana Versiter is both playing the character and also saying, I am so much better than this as an actor. Like, she's saying two things at the same time.
Yeah.
And it's fucking great.
Please tell me we have a better episode coming up next, Ben.
The next episode is season 1, episode 10, The Negus. Quark is suddenly named leader of the Ferengi financial empire and discovers that he's not only popular, he's now a target for death.
That's what popularity gets you, Ben. A bullseye.
If you want to become the Negus, you better remember one thing. A good supply of body bags.
A Ferengi bullseye just has... two smaller bullseyes attached to the sides of the circle. Great. Well, looks like a Quark-centered episode, and that's something that I could be into.
I could be into that, too. Also, the Negus is obviously a Wallace Shawn character, which is always delightful, Adam.
Oh, did not know that. I love a Wallace Shawn.
Wallace Shawn, a recurring featured performer on Deep Space Nine, which is... maybe the main thing about Deep Space Nine that is great.
Fantastic.
All right. Do we want to find out if we're going to be drunk dopes during this Negus episode?
Roll them bones, Ben.
It is a 10, Adam, so we will be avoiding drunkenness once again.
Two pinch showing. Oh, too bad.
Fair enough. Well, one thing we can't possibly avoid are the conversations that happen after each and every episode of Greatest Gen. Those happen over at Facebook at one of two groups. There's sort of a public-facing group where we post our shows and a private group that you need to apply for entry to, Ben, to prove that you're not a robot. And all sorts of fun conversations happen there, the memeing of our jokes and whatnot. Just a great, great place on Facebook to talk about the show. We also do that over on Twitter using the hashtag GreatestGen, or I am there as @CutForTime, and you are there as @BenjaminR, AHR.
We should thank Dark Materia for our theme music, and Adam Ragusea for the majority of the rest of the music you hear on the program. If you enjoy the show, go over to MaximumFun.org/donate and help support its production. And while you're over there, check out the other shows on MaximumFun.org. There's some great ones. You got Lady to Lady. You got My Brother, My Brother and Me. You got Judge John Hodgman. Jordan, Jesse, go. Stop podcasting yourself. Baby Geniuses. They're adding new shows all the time. There's just a total embarrassment of comedy gold over there. And highly recommend you go check all that stuff out.
Yeah, I recommend the same. With that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of... another much, much better episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And another episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine. That is inconceivable.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.